Well, welcome everyone to the Resilient Leadership Podcast, where everything we talk about is aimed at helping you lead with a greater sense of calm, clarity, and conviction, even in anxious times. My name is Irvin Nugent, and today, as always, I am joined by my co-host, collaborator, and dear friend, Bridget Tyre. Bridget, how are you doing today?
Irvin, I'm doing wonderfully, and I am delighted to be here with you today. Before we hit the record button, you were just sharing a little bit of some recent, shall we say, a bit of a challenging situation, but you are no worse for the wear.
I guess.
And I'm glad to have you back in action.
Likewise, I'm glad to be speaking. I had a little bit of oral surgery, and if it was a week ago, my voice would have sounded like I had an apple in it. But at the moment now, I'm pretty good. I think I'm clear.
Yeah, you sound like yourself again. So that's wonderful. And today we are talking about something that I imagine our listeners will immediately gravitate towards. Mm-hmm. And it's building on a previous episode. Yep. So I'm excited to dive in. So get us going.
Yeah. So today I think we're going to talk about something that's really deeply human. And the episode is called Don't Take It Home, How Leaders Protect Their Energy After Hard Days. So if you're listening here, I'm sure you've had a hard day in the last week, because a lot of leaders I work with, every day, like at least there's one day a week that's a hard day. What we're talking about today isn't about avoiding hard conversations, but rather it's all about what happens after them. You know, have you ever driven home at night and all of a sudden you're replaying the meeting or something incident that happened during the day? Or you walk through the door and you realized that you're still tense from something that happened at 2 p.m. Mm-hmm. Maybe your tone was a little shorter than you intended. Your patience was a little thinner. And later you thought, well, you know, that had nothing to do with them. That was about something previously. So today we're going to talk about what I like to call this emotional residue and how leaders metabolize tension instead of carrying it into the next room of their lives.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm curious, you know, Bridget, you work with a lot of different leaders in many different circumstances. And I'm curious, how would they describe it? You know, when they're talking about this phenomena, what's some of the things that you hear?
Mm-hmm. Well, you know, I don't think they say things like, oh, I had, you know, emotional spillover today.
True.
But they do say things like, God, I went home and I couldn't turn my brain off, you know, or I woke up at 3 a.m. and my brain was going and going and going and I couldn't shut those thoughts off. Or I'm so irritable. I've been more irritable lately, and I'm not even an irritable person, or I'm exhausted and I'm tired. And there's sort of a weariness. But I think underneath those words is accumulated tension, right? It's been building up, and it gets expressed like that. But again, they wouldn't say, I have accumulated tension.
Yeah.
So true. What about you? What do you notice?
Yeah, you know, I think it's interesting. You know, I think we have some biases or which are built into us, things like, you know, well, taking it home means I'm weak or something. And it doesn't mean that you're weak. It just means that, you know, in a way you're human, and that your nervous system has to go through a process in this stress cycle. And sometimes we just don't go through the whole process. And, you know, very often I think leaders are trained to perform under pressure, but we're rarely trained to recover from it.
Oh.
And I think resilience, you know, is not just about, you know, enduring the pressure off the moment, but it's also about this restoring yourself, because, you know, leadership is a marathon. It's not a sprint. Yeah. And so if it's a marathon, then what practices do we have? Because I think they're incredibly important.
You know, that statement you just made is really a good one. It struck me, which is that, you know, leaders are taught to perform under pressure, but not how to recover from it. And it makes me think of clients who often say to me, you know, I'm good under pressure. And of course, they would have to be to have gotten into their jobs.
Yeah.
But that is different from recovering from it. So I love that. So what do you think is going on inside of us as humans? What's happening internally when we're not recovering?
Well, you know, I think it's, we've talked of these ideas in the past many times, but it's really putting it together here. And that is, you know, whenever there is a tension in relationships, be it workplace or even in your families, that can be feeling, you know, challenged or questioned, or someone tries to rush you or wants you to take responsibility, our brain is not just activating there. Our body is. Our body is reacting to these different realities. And even if you're able to handle it well in the externally in a wonderful conversation, you can masterfully handle it. You yes. also can't forget that your nervous system has also been elevated. And switching off the nervous system is not that easy. You know, cortisol just doesn't disappear when the meeting ends, and our adrenaline, we're pumped with adrenaline at this, maybe this difficult conversation we've had. Mm-hmm. That just doesn't vanish when we send an email or clarify the conversation. Therefore, it stays. And how does it stay? Well, it stays in some of the things we've talked about. You replay it mentally. We're playing the story again. We feel there's an irritability. All of a sudden, you just feel irritable or just feel so tired that you're numb. You're emotionally numb. Or sometimes you're waking up in the middle of the night. You have difficulty sleeping or just can't get to sleep because you're replaying it. And maybe your patience is not as good. And so here's what the point I want to make is that if your emotions are unprocessed, you know, if we haven't really processed them, they're going to travel. And this is what we're experiencing. So I'm curious, Bridget, you know, we always try and put this in a context of systems. I think this is a great one to put in a systems context. What do you think is happening within the wider system here?
Well, as you know, something I'm fond of saying that, you know, in a relational system, what affects one affects all. And we don't even have to have conversations about what's happened. So a leader comes home from work and he or she might not say a thing about what went on at work. But because, to your point, their nervous system is carrying this unresolved tension, people feel it. So family members feel it. Partners pick up on it. Kids react to shifts in tone, to, you know, body language and so forth. And just like we've said, you know, previously that a team regulates around the leader, a family regulates around a parent, regulates around the leader. So bottom line is when the leader arrives and they have not recovered yet, the system tightens.
Yeah.
There's a contraction.
Yeah.
And this is not about blame, right? It's not about, oh, you know, too bad you're, you know, doing that to your family. It's about being human and it's about awareness.
Yeah.
That's the thing, right? It's like awareness. And then with awareness comes choice. And then we're going to talk about what some of our choices are, but anything to add, Irvin?
You use that word constriction, you know, and I love that because I can remember, you know, Fred, my husband, who's a dentist, and he'll come back after a hard day and he doesn't say anything when he gets in the door. I feel it. And there's a constriction within me. I don't mentally say this, oh, I can't say this or the other. It just happens naturally. I feel the tension. I get smaller myself. I'm a little bit of an eggshell, what I can say, what I can't say. And that's all happening without me even thinking it's happening. And that's just, yeah, it's such a perfect example of how kind of systemically this can really influence in those around us.
Yeah. And that's a safety reaction, right? To constrict is about safety because we're sensing that, you know, oh, if we say or do certain things, that might set a person off or, you know, whatever. So yeah, completely normal, natural. And everybody who's listening is probably nodding their head. So in terms of the predictable, maybe patterns where this would show up, this dynamic that, you know, we're talking about, what I'm curious, Irvin, what have you noticed?
Yeah. So I think, you know, at times you might think, well, this is just random. We randomly have bad days. But really, if you explore and dig a little deeper, I think there are some patterns that are important for us to surface. So one pattern would be public challenge.
Oh, yeah.
You know, if someone challenges you publicly at a meeting or whatever, even if you handle it well, you're still activated and you're replaying that in the evening. You know, a question at a meeting which you felt was a little sharper than needed to be, or perhaps you felt your own credibility being exposed. You know, outwardly, you may be very composed, but your nervous system experienced threat, and that is going to linger until it works itself out. So that's a pattern. Another one is, and we're replete with these in our lives, is unresolved conflicts. You know, a conversation that either didn't land, tension that's there, but we don't name it. We want closure. We don't, as human beings, we want closure, and we don't do well when we don't have that closure because it invites story. It invites, you know, all the different machinations of what happened and what didn't happen. And so it's humming. So it's still, the conversation hasn't happened and the tension is there, and that's background noise that's still going on. And then the other one, we talked about this the last time. Actually, funny, we were just before a podcast, we were talking about this invisible emotional labor. What's that about? Well, I think, you know, as humans, we absorb a lot more than we realize.
Mm-hmm.
And we're holding space, we're mediating, we're reassuring, we're listening deeply. And that's a lot to contain. And some people, you know, that happens a lot to them. You know, some people are known as, well, we can go to that person. Like Bridget, you were saying, I can go to you because you're a great listener. Well, the thing about it is then we also have to contain that. And no matter, you know, how well we try, there's a residue there, and that's always permeating within us.
So true.
So, so that's three that come to mind. I'm curious, Bridget, would you add any others? What have you noticed?
Yeah, I'm thinking of actually a recent coaching session that's coming to mind where somebody was talking about how difficult it is to have to hit certain goals and metrics when there are variables outside their control, right? Like the marketplace, you know, and shifts in the marketplace. And this person was saying, you know, my boss still expects me and my team to hit all these metrics as if there has been no shift in the marketplace.
Yeah.
And I don't want to sound like a negative Nancy, and I don't want to sound like I'm not a team player, but I feel like I have all this responsibility and yet no control to make it happen.
Yep.
And so the brain, like you were saying then, right, is in the background searching for a way to resolve that.
Yep.
Like, how do I still fulfill that responsibility even though I don't have control of the reins over here? And I think that's tough, right?
Yeah, yeah. So I think at this stage, I think everyone can resonate with this idea. I think we all can name examples. And I think it's pretty intuitive that our nervous system just doesn't get over things just like that. So then, Bridget, I think what would be useful, can we turn to maybe something practical that we can use rather than sitting for hours stewing or replaying or not getting to sleep? What can we do with this emotional residue, as I called it?
Yeah. Okay. So here's a simple, but I think very powerful practice. And you can use it at the end of the day when you're still at the office. You can use it once you're home and you're kind of trying to wind down with a nice relaxing evening, but you have a sense that your mind is still working, right? Mm-hmm. And I call it close the loop because that's what our brain is trying to do. Mm-hmm. And it only takes about 3 minutes and it's pretty simple. All right, so here's how it works. Step one is name what is still open. Just that alone is so helpful. So you just have to ask yourself, all right, what conversation is still running in my head? Mm-hmm. What outcome am I still carrying? Or what emotion hasn't settled? You don't have to solve it. You know, you're just naming it because the residue lingers because it's undefined. And I think just that clarity reduces the emotional load, the emotional weight, right? So it's like, oh yeah, you know, what's still open for me is that conversation I had earlier with my boss. I'm not feeling great about it. That's just still lingering. Great. That's step number one. All right. Now, step number two is just decide what you're going to do with that. You're going to either take action, you're going to schedule, or you're going to release it. One of those three. So act, is there something I need to do tomorrow? And you just write it down. You know? So if it's that unresolved conversation with your boss, you might write something down and say, ask for a follow-up meeting and spend some time tomorrow prepping for that. then maybe you need to schedule it. So put it on your calendar. And then sometimes the best thing you can do and the only thing you can do really is to release it. Mm. And so you say, is this outside my control right now? And if the answer is yes, you just say to yourself, not mine to solve tonight. And I think that is so powerful because, you know, you use the word closure. When you say not mine to solve tonight, there's closure for the evening and your mind can rest.
Yeah.
And it can restore a sense of personal agency. Okay? Mm. All right. One more step. I love this step because it marks the day as complete. And you just say, and I think it's helpful to say it out loud, but at least say it to yourself, the work day is complete. What do you think of that practice when you hear me walk through those three steps? What does it provoke for you?
You know, one of the things I keep coming back to is this, is that very often in our world, we challenge leaders to be productive. We challenge leaders to have outcomes, and leaders get into this game of metrics, and not saying that that's not important. But I think one of the most important metrics for longevity is energy. And I think how leaders manage their energy is absolutely incredibly important. And so I love this practice because to me, it's about a little bit of containment and it's about protecting yourself. It's protecting the people, your loved ones. And it's also about really making sure that the leader you'll be tomorrow is the best it can be. And I think that that energy is so important that very often, you know, we give people awards for being over, you know, being brave and doing these wonderful things. And that's great. And the leaders that survive are the ones that really are able to really practice that energy to recuperate. And that really adds to longevity.
Gosh, that's so true. And when you say, you know, manage your energy, we're taught to manage time and manage our calendars. I don't know so much about the manage your energy thing. I don't think that's as
no, I don't think so. Yeah. There's almost an expectation that you do it. You know what I mean? And it's crazy. Yeah.
I'm wondering then if you have worked with a leader before who you think learned how to do this pretty well. And if so, it'd be great to share it with listeners.
So there's one person that really comes to mind. It was a healthcare leader. You know, as we were going through the coaching, there was this realization. And the way that he named it was, you know, he said, when I leave work, he said, I don't think I'm leaving the hospital. Mm. I said, I'm bringing the hospital home with me. I thought that was great. He said, I'm bringing the hospital home with me with all that imagery, you know, which I thought was so rich. Mm-hmm. And I said, well, explain that. Like, what's, and he said, well, it's not that I'm going home angry. And he said, but I'm just withdrawn. I'm physically maybe there, but mentally, I'm still back in the hospital. I'm in the meetings. I'm carrying some patient outcomes. I'm replaying some decisions that I had to make. And what it really, really hit home for him was one day when his partner said to him, you know, I feel like you're still at work even when you're at home. Oof. And whoa, what about, like, what a truth statement that is. And I think that became a turning point for him. Because I think one of the important realizations, see, because this is, I think, the mistake. You can go down the route and say, well, I need to reduce my stress. And the reality was, the realization is, I can't. That's my world. I run a busy hospital. It is going to be stressful. There is no way.
That's right.
He created himself a little ritual, which is actually not too far from what we've just talked about, which is close the loop. And his little ritual was, he would drive home at night, and instead of getting out of the car, he would stay in his car for a few minutes, and he would name a win from the day. And he would acknowledge a frustration that he was carrying, very much like the exercise we're talking. And he would say, that's going to be there in the morning. Can I let it go for the evening? And then he said, the workday is complete. And I think, you know, he started this ritual and then he said, you know, I did not realize how much I was carrying until I decided not to carry it. And I think, you know, that greatly improved his evening experience. Was it foolproof? Of course not. Some days are worse than others. But overall, it's that habit you create of really honoring your energy and honoring what you've gone through and to be able to say, I need time to recuperate.
Yeah, I love that example. A couple of things really struck me. One is to have a partner who could mirror back to you gently, not judgmentally, right?
Yes.
Where the partner didn't say, why are you never here? Why are you never present? You know, just said, you know, I just feel like maybe you're not here with us. And we need that. We need people in our lives who can tell us that. That he said, you know, I didn't realize how much I was carrying it until I stopped carrying it.
Mm.
Isn't that true? Until we lay a burden down, we are so accustomed to carrying it. It seems normal.
Yeah.
You know? So what a great conversation. I feel I'm taking something away from this myself. I need to do a better job of closing the loop, as we call that practice, because you know how we get into practices and then we get off the wagon and then we got to get back on the wagon. I need to get back on the wagon and do a better job of closing the loop on my days.
Yeah.
And I think I'll rest even better. But to our listeners, you know, if you've ever walked in the door and realized you were still carrying the day, welcome to the human race, of course. This episode, though, is a, you know, it's just a reminder to all of us that you don't have to be perfect, but you do need recovery. Don't take it home. Not because your family deserves better, because of course they do, but because sustainable leadership requires renewal. There is no other way to do it. We are not machines. We are human beings. Pressure will come again tomorrow, and resilience is built in the space in between.
Yeah.
Well, thank you, Irvin.
Hey, thank you, Bridget. That was really thought-provoking, and hopefully our listeners as well have some noodles to think about and maybe develop your own close the loop process. Doesn't have to, you don't have to follow us word by word. Just as the client we talked about, create your own ritual, but have a ritual, have something that helps you recuperate each and every day.
Beautiful.
Well, everyone, thank you for listening. If you find this episode useful, please feel free to share it with others. I'm sure there are many people in your world that go through stressful days, and maybe this is just what they need to hear. And we look forward to welcoming you in the next episode. Take care, everyone. Bye-bye.